All right, welcome. Thank you for attending session 234, titled The Colorado City Music Festival. Before we begin, we have a few announcements. We ask that cell phones are turned off and that those attending be respectful and attentive. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to the Sunstone magazine and podcast at the registration desk as well. Concessions will be open in the venue for lunch, or you are welcome to visit local restaurants in the area. Please return by 1:45 to get a seat in the next session. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. As you can see from your programs, this presentation description is as follows about this session. The Colorado City Music Festival, held in the Polygamist Hotbed, is the first festival of its kind. Bennett, one of its founders, will outline the relationships built, the challenges, and how he found Mormon fundamentalists open to sharing their culture. He'll also talk about the changes he has seen in the community since the event began 3 years ago. Tom Bennett is a roaming mystic and full-time traveling musician. He gave 2 lectures at Sunstone in 2018 and performed his original music in 2017. He has been a Baptist, a Mormon fundamentalist, a Buddhist, and an occultist. His spirituality is defined by the statement, "I am constantly in awe of the great mystery which surrounds us." And now we turn the time over to the presentation. Well, we'll have Q&A at the end also. Thanks.
How are y'all doing? How's Sunstone going for you? Good. I'm glad you're here. I always look forward to this event myself. As you mentioned, my name is Tom Bennett, and this talk is the Colorado City Music Festival. On April 27th, 4,000 people showed up at Hilldale, Utah, Maxwell Park to listen to live music, drink beer, check out local vendors, and generally have an amazing time. This was the third time for the third year in a row. I'm talking about the Colorado City Music Festival. You're probably thinking, the FLDS don't listen to music, right? I thought outsiders weren't even allowed in the Crick. Well, there was a time when you would have been right, but Short Creek is evolving. It hasn't been an easy road. It's more like a sandy path that leads up to Hilldale's Water Canyon. It's slow going, sometimes difficult to navigate. Sometimes it seems impassable, but with effort, you can do it, and it's worth it. And of course, there's a long and wild backstory to this. And the backstory of the festival is my story, as well as the story of a few others that have invested themselves. So here it goes. I wasn't born or raised anywhere close to the Short Creek community of southern Utah. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until I was 16 years old, and until I was 16 years old, I'd never heard of polygamy, Joseph Smith, or even Mormonism for that matter. I was raised on a small hay farm in West Georgia. Eagle Crest was like a dream. Hayfields, pine and oak forest, and swamps stretched out over 89 acres of the Georgia Piedmont region, where the foothills began their slow ascent into the Smoky Mountains. Lovers' names were carved into old oak trees. Old whiskey stills lay amongst the leaves and pine needles, still bearing the ancient scars from the Prohibition-era lawmen's axes. It was hillbilly country. My family had no interest in religion, but we were surrounded by Baptists and Pentecostals. As beautiful as it was there on the family farm, I always wanted to see more. I had the insatiable desire to travel. By the time I reached 15 years old, I was no longer a precocious young farm kid. My friends and I had been experimenting with weed, and not long after that had begun taking LSD. Through a strange sequence of events, I began to develop an interest in spirituality and religion. The first and most practical step was to research what was around. I read the Bible and visited the local Baptist church. Callie Harbin Missionary Baptist Church is an old Southern-style church. The preacher looked like a white-haired Johnny Cash. He had tall pompadour hairstyle and long white sideburns that came down to his jawline. He preached in a Southern bark, yelling his exhortations to acknowledge the sinful nature and the need for the redeeming sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Brothers and sisters, this is a time for repentance. The That's what we're talking about today. That was my preacher. Each service was ended with an altar call. The preacher would quiet to a whisper and ask everyone to bow their head and close their eyes. He would ask if there was anyone in attendance who did not know that they were saved, that they were not certain that they would go to heaven when they die. If one did not possess this knowledge, he would ask them to raise their hand. He would then quietly plead for them to come and join him at the altar. After attending this church for quite some time, I felt moved and found myself kneeling at the altar. The preacher placed his giant hand upon my shoulder and we kneeled together. He asked me to join him in prayer. Lord Jesus, I know that I'm a sinner. I know that you died on the cross for my sins. I accept you, Lord, as my personal Savior and Lord of my life and ask you to forgive me and to save me. That day I accepted Jesus Christ as Lord, and with tears in my eyes I stood in front of the congregation as good-hearted Southern people as they exploded into a rapturous and beautiful rendition of Amazing Grace. They all rushed forward to receive me, and I was ushered with the congregation into the beautiful spring day as a new Christian. It was quite a relief knowing that I would go to heaven when I died. I didn't consider at the time that I didn't know what heaven is. Is that a state of mind? Is it a place? Would I sit on a cloud and play the harp for eternity? Maybe God just gets you really high. Is it somewhere I would even want to go? At the time, I was sure I was going, and it felt good. Besides, they say hell is the other option. The religious high lasted a few weeks, but in the meanwhile, questions began to arise in my mind. Who or what is God? Why did Jesus say that heaven is within? What is the glory of God? Why does he need our worship? As you likely know, there are a million people out there that would be happy to answer these questions for you. Any number of preachers, gurus, and so-called saints. There is a high price, though. It's your ability to question, and sometimes much more. The garbage eaters came to our little town. Perhaps it was all the psychedelic drugs. Maybe it was growing up surrounded by nature. There could be a million reasons, but many of the teenagers I was growing up around were also very eager to try to find a little truth. We were all poor country kids, with probably more things in common than not, but the one thing that we all had was a love of music. Steve was a few years older than us, a real hippie. He was even named after the great guitar player Stevie Ray Vaughan. Even though he was only 17, he was already a heavy pot smoker and had taken his fair share of LSD and mushrooms. He could shred on the guitar, and we all looked up to him. He fell in with a group of very interesting folks. The Jim Roberts group, known as the Garbage Eaters, were a traveling group of hippie Christians that frequented rock concerts. The men wore their hair long and dressed in tunics. They rode old bicycles. The women had even longer hair and would always look at the ground. While walking barefoot through the city streets in their long dresses, which would drag, they would not speak to a man unless they were spoken to. These people were strictly biblical. Not even braids were allowed in their hair. Garbage eaters could quote the Bible word for word on any number of topics. Even in hindsight, looking back at them, if you want to take the Bible literally, I've never met any people that followed it more closely. If the Bible said, leave your father and mother and come follow me, the garbage eaters did it. If it said, sell everything and give the money to the poor, they did that too. Well, kind of. I've heard the majority of the money went to none other than their leader, Jim Roberts. Big surprise, right? They got the name garbage eaters because they were scroungers. They would eat whatever they could find wherever they found it. They did not earn or spend money. All they did was preach, study, and listen to rock and roll. A number of my friends fell in love with the garbage eaters and disappeared. I went a different direction. It wasn't too long before my questions found another source of answers. I was just nearing completion of reading the Bible when one afternoon I went down by the riverside to read. I felt compelled to turn on the television on my way out the door, and there on the TV I saw Jesus Christ nailed to the cross. The way he was conveyed in this commercial seemed very heartfelt and meaningful, and it arose in me a sense of curiosity. The phone number was offered, and I decided I would call. My parents were always very open to me exercising my own curiosity and seeking my own answers, so it was no problem when the LDS missionaries came to my house to deliver the Lamb of God video. Elder Sipes and Jimenez were young and enthusiastic. They were just as knowledgeable as the garbage eaters, but they also dove into deeper concepts. And something I really enjoyed is they spoke of having a personal connection to God where one could seek their own answers. I studied with the missionaries for about a year and visited the church a handful of times before I decided to become a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The church quickly became everything, and no matter where my life has led me, I have absolutely no regrets having been a fully committed member of the church. I began going out with the missionaries on missionary exchanges 3 to 4 times a week. On one occasion, I gave away over 20 copies of the Book of Mormon at school in a single day. This severely pissed off the administration. I couldn't understand how they would be offended at someone doing the will of God. I finished high school, and the church got me a job at a glass factory where I was able to work and save up the money to pay for a mission. I turned over around $8,000 cash to my bishop and was called to serve in the Utah-Ogden mission. Now, I know this is getting very long-winded, but I swear it will all come back to the music festival, so I thank you for your patience. My 2 years as a missionary were a very joyful time for me. I was completely enamored by the natural beauty of Utah, both the mountains and the really hot girls that were all over the place. It was very hard to focus as a missionary in Utah, and if I'm being completely honest with you, I'll tell you that I almost got sent home once for kissing a girl. I baptized quite a few girls, too. But what was really awesome about my Utah mission was I could get my hands on real Mormonism. Before I left on my mission, I'd studied a great deal on my own and had begun to attend a special Sunday school class at the home of one of the stake presidency members. The class was attended by the counselor to the stake president and his wife and was held in their home, and my ward mission leader and his wife attended, along with myself and the young man who baptized me. We studied a wide range of Mormon topics, from calling an election made sure to the Adam God principle, and of course there was a very heavy dose of polygamy and united order. It was in this class that I became familiar with the Journal of Discourses, which I eventually read in their entirety. All 26 volumes. Utah offered me no shortage of quality literature or well-educated Latter-day Saints to expound to me. I was able to attend the temple as frequently as I desired, and I would often sit in the celestial room and quietly converse with other close member friends who were more than happy to share with me the secrets of the kingdom. This is how I came to know the various polygamy-practicing Mormon fundamentalist groups. It was also around this time that I got to meet my first polygamist. We were out knocking doors one day when one of the members in the area told us not to bother knocking on the door of his neighbor. He claimed that the neighbor always kept to himself and had a number of children and wives. I was more than a little excited to meet my first polygamist. I quickly thanked the member for the information and ran off to knock that door. The man who answered was in his later middle age. He was a lawyer and a member of the Kingston group. I did not find the man was unpolite or dismissive at all. And when he found that I had at least a working knowledge of gospel principles, he was happy to speak to me. I ended up meeting a few of his family members, including a younger man who had 3 wives and a few children living further up the hill in a more affluent, bountiful Utah community. This other Kingston man was very outgoing and friendly, even more so than the first. He didn't seem to feel the need to be secretive at all with me, and he invited us to dinner. I was deeply honored when he gave me an old copy of Truth Magazine, a fundamentalist Mormon publication from Short Creek. My companion began to develop a sense of concern about my eagerness to learn about fundamentalism, and thus reported me to the mission president, who simply instructed me to return the magazine. I'm sure that by this time my early Mormon leanings were no mystery, as I had begun to speak frequently in church about united order and other early Mormon principles. I still sustained the church leadership and was in no way out of line with mainstream teachings. However, this was not always be the case. I eventually went on to finish my mission as a zone leader. I returned to Georgia, but Utah never left my heart. I worked for a short time restoring old houses with a member of my ward, but I felt the call of Utah. I taped a notepad to my steering wheel in case of any spontaneous song lyrics, observations, or potential revelations coming to mind, and headed west. I didn't pull a handcart. Back in Utah, my life quickly evolved. I eventually began to study Buddhism, a religion I had previously become slightly aware of, and though I always kept somewhat of a philosophical mind and a sense of curiosity for a number of years, I employed the philosophy of Blake when he said, quote, "The path of excess leads to the palace of wisdom," end quote. I experimented heavily with a variety of drugs, alcohol, and riotous living. And though sometimes things got very out of hand, I generally had the time of my life. Music was always a constant. Even when in the church, when my music life went heavily on the back burner, I still sang, "If I could hide a kolob with all my might, mind, and strength." Now back in Utah, I began to audition for bands, eventually securing the role of a lead singer with a relatively successful emo band. I grew out my hair and screamed my way across the country. As I grew older and my music and philosophy evolved, I eventually found myself having trouble reconciling who I'd become with who I had been. I looked in the mirror and saw my long black hair cut to hang over one eye and my ashen complexion staring back at me, and I wondered, where was the precocious, wild farm boy of my youth? Throughout the course of the next decade, I slowly began a process of reconciliation. My Chuck Taylor All-Stars eventually gave way to cowboy boots, and my black shag of hair got shorter and got covered by a cowboy hat. My tattoos still cover my arms, and now I have even more. They've become a memoir of places I have been and people I have been. Eventually, I learned to play the guitar and began singing country music. With my solo acoustic music, I began to enjoy more success than I had previously had playing with bands. It wasn't long until I was again traveling all over the United States at every dive bar, barbecue joint, and small town festival I could find. I decided to base every song on pure truth. I would only sing about real people in real places. One of my tours took me through some new territory as I rode east along the Mexico border and made my way up the middle of Arizona. By the time I reached Flagstaff, I was in awe of the beauty of the Southwest. Outside of the Vermilion Cliffs, I fell to my knees under the bright blue sky and raised my hands towards heaven, giving thanks. The drive from there north into St. George was pure elation. My route would take me along the state line of Utah and Arizona, and in the middle of a long, colorful, majestic desert, I could see a small town rising to my right. A million different memories and forgotten gospel mysteries flooded into my mind and heart as I saw that the sign said, Colorado City. That's my little girl, Ozella. This is her first sunstone. She's 6 months old. I would put my money on it that there's not anyone who's ever come to Utah who hasn't at least heard of Short Creek. I'd seen numerous articles, newspaper stories, and even a couple documentaries about the place and its peculiar religion. Everyone thinks they know a lot about Colorado City, and I was curious to see what the real truth was. That first visit to Short Creek, which for those unfamiliar is Hilldale, Utah, and Colorado City, is the name by which many in the community refer to the area, was more eventful than any I could imagine. Though the streets were quiet and I did not see anyone out walking, I decided I would take a little stroll around. I put on a long-sleeved shirt and a baseball cap and left my van on the side of the road. I made my way under an arched white metal sign that said UEP. The UEP was the financial arm of the FLDS Church. It was intended to be a united effort plan, a communal money pool from which the community would live together in harmony under the celestial law of united order. There's much I could say about the FLDS, Short Creek, and the religion, but for the sake of brevity and redundancy, I'll forego it. I found Cottonwood Park in a state of relative neglect. The massive cottonwood trees reached towards swings that were missing their chains. Old buildings, which had the appearance of being a reproduction of the Old West, sat in various states of decay around the perimeter of the park. There was no laughter, no children. Occasionally, a car would pass by, slowly. The media would have me believe that at any moment the God Squad was going to be pulling up on me in their jacked-up trucks and SUVs. In reality, the days of the God Squad had passed. The church security force had left town along with many of the FLDS people. As I walked back to my van, an old green minivan pulled up alongside of me. At the driver's seat, a tall, thin man with a wild shock of blonde hair, a huge smile graced his face. In the back of the van, the seats having all been removed, there was nearly a dozen nearly identical children with the same blonde hair. They were all under 10 years old. The man introduced himself with some almost biblical name, which I cannot recall. He then asked if I were lost. "No, this is Colorado City," I told him. He said, "Yeah, but do you know what that means?" I began to tell him that I was very well aware of the history of the fundamentalist Mormon movement and the events of 1886. I mentioned the Council of Friends and the founding of Short Creek. He began to laugh and said, "I grew up here, and I think you might know more than me. Would you like a tour?" Only half believing the man's offer, I exclaimed, "Hell yes." I jumped in the van and followed him to the edge of town, up a dirt road to a place I'd only seen on the cover of National Geographic magazine. He took me to one of the most beautiful places I have ever been. I exited my van and stood in complete wonder under the massive red cliffs of Maxwell Park. The place was vividly alive compared to the contrasting town below. FLDS children in prairie dresses and country clothes ran around the field engaged in a game of kickball. My new friend waved farewell as he took off back down the dirt road. I sat under the shade of a pine tree in disbelief. I wanted desperately to speak to the children, but had been told that they would not talk to strangers. But I had something special. Something that for countless generations has acted as a bridge to the gap between people. Something we all have in common. I had music. I was well aware that the people in the religion did not listen to secular religion music, so I took out my resonator guitar, my slide, and my harmonica, and quietly began to pick a gentle instrumental tune. It didn't take long before I was surrounded. The children excitedly asked about my unique guitar with its metal face. An eager young boy pointed at my harmonica as he asked what it was. I remember asking where the restroom was, and a teenage girl bashfully replied, "It's over there, but it's none too grand." I loved her unique accent and her choice of words. She seemed as though she was from another time and another place. And in a way, she was. I had the immediate and powerful desire to put on a concert in Short Creek. It was only a few months later that I moved to St. George, and from that time I began to encounter more FLDS people. As I performed more and more around the city, occasionally FLDS people would come out to the shows. The first FLDS person that I met, other than these children, was a man named Austin. I had invited everyone at the show to join me at a bar nearby for drinks, and most of them did, but Austin replied that he needed to get home and that he lived about an hour away. I asked, "Oh, you live in Cedar City?" And exactly at the moment he was saying no, it hit me. Oh, this guy's from the Crick. He's FLDS. He and I have stayed friends, and much of what I know about Short Creek he has shown me, including beautiful hiking spots and some of the freshest, most pure water on earth. I've come to know him as a very philosophical and artistic man. When speaking of his childhood and the religion, he has nothing but the most positive things to say about both the culture and his personal family situation. Specifically, there were 3 mothers in his family and 23 children. I remember asking him about the chances of putting on a concert in the community, and he replied that it would be highly unlikely. This would be the response I would get from everyone for the next entire year. Quite some time passed, and I made a few more visits to the community. I'd come to know a handful of people who'd grown up there, and I was beginning to get a better understanding of the reality of the evolution that was taking place as FLDS people were leaving, and the ones that they called apostates, those who had left the faith either of their own accord or by force, were returning. I met a young man who took part in the film Prophets Pray. He had a very different mentality than nearly everyone else. He had a certain positive attitude that it could be done, that a concert could indeed happen in Short Creek. He suggested that I would do as I should do in any other town and go to the city hall and request a permit. So that's what I did. I didn't understand that Hilldale and Colorado City had 2 separate governments at first. So I went to the Colorado City offices. I spoke to a gentleman whose name was, of course, Barlow, which is a very common name amongst the people there. He didn't seem the slightest bit surprised at my request and simply said, I don't care. Use the park if you want. Just clean up when you're done. My original intention was to simply bring down my PA system and play music for an hour or two for whoever showed up. But this idea had a life of its own. Another powerful young lady, a businesswoman from nearby Centennial Park, another polygamous community in the area, put me in touch with a woman named Gwen Darger. Gwen had recently started a business right in the heart of Colorado City. She's the owner of Barry Knoll Bakery and Edge of the World Brewery. If you go down to Colorado City, you can drink a beer now. Gwen is a very intelligent, forward-thinking person. Not knowing her at all, I took a shot in the dark and told her that I was a nationally touring country blues one-man band and that I was interested in putting on a free concert at her bakery. She loved the idea. 3 months later, we put on one of the very first ever concerts in Short Creek. I was told later that it wasn't the first concert, that sometime in the 1960s, the United States Marine Corps performed there. The event was a great success with about 60 people showing up, filling the small bakery with happy people and music. Many people danced, but the highlight for me was the end of the night when an older woman approached me in her modest dress. She took both of my hands and excitedly told me about how in her youth she would hide in a closet with a small radio held up to her ear and listen to the Grand Ole Opry. She loved the music of Hank Williams, and I had just played one of his songs that she had not heard in years. Another concert in Short Creek needed to happen, and it needed to happen soon. It was suggested that I put on a full-on music festival. I had no experience in the logistics side of music festivals, but I had performed at a few, and I knew what a good one looked like and felt like, both from the performer's perspective and from the perspective of a listener. I knew I would need a lot of help. I began to attend community meetings in Colorado City and Hilldale. The more friends I made, the more I began to hear that people had come in over the last handful of years under the guise of making a positive change, only to be found out as people who wanted to exploit the negative image of the community for their own purposes. Documentary filmmakers, writers, a lot of church groups, and countless others had built trust and then betrayed it. Many were naturally wary of me. I knew that all I could be was myself, and so I had to give them an opportunity to get to know me. I knew I was making headway with people from the community. I knew I was making headway when people from the community began to hire me to perform at weddings and funerals. I was invited to perform at the memorial for the tragic flood that had taken many lives in the community. I was deeply moved and honored by this invitation. It was around this time that many began to see me for who I am, and some had the desire to help me in my mission to bring music back to Short Creek. I'll always remember the day I attended a Chamber of Commerce meeting. They asked if anyone had anything they would like to add, and I stood up and proposed my idea of a music festival in the community. A few people asked questions, but it was mostly in one ear and out the other. There was one woman who heard exactly what I was trying to say and saw the potential. Dawn Beislein Cook was born and raised in the community and in the religion. She grew up as a faithful FLDS girl. From the day she left her religion behind, she has forged her own way, becoming a successful businesswoman and mother. She had moved back to the area to be a caretaker and to lend her talents to the upbuilding of the community that defined the early years of her life. At the conclusion of the Chamber of Commerce meeting, Dawn spoke to me and offered her assistance. I've told her many times since that she came to save the festival. I had tried, largely unsuccessfully, to raise the thousands of dollars it takes to put on a small event. From hiring the bands to purchasing the permit, porta-potties, insurance, arranging vendors, hiring security, and the countless other tasks that must be performed, I was ready to give up. It was far too much work for one traveling one-man band to handle. We worked tirelessly and jumped many hurdles and were able to hold the very first ever Colorado City Music Festival in 2015. 800 people attended. I reached out to bands and musicians from my years on the road and asked them to come perform in the middle of nowhere for a fraction of the money that they were actually worth. Nearly all of them said, hell yeah. And they came and they put on the show of a lifetime. Organizations like the Fern Foundation and people like Sunstone's Lindsay Hansen Park and Sean Casey from Zoo Audio helped us to make an event like Short Creek has never seen. The first year, the festival didn't lose any money, and it was totally free to attend. Around 1,000 people showed up from all over the United States the second year. Our furthest traveling musician came all the way from Sweden. At our most recent festival on April 27th, 4,000 people showed up to enjoy music at Maxwell Park. We also had the first ever beer garden. 26 kegs of beer sold in 2 hours and 15 minutes. There was almost a riot. The mayor opened the gates and said you could bring in your own alcohol, and it turned into a party. Only one person was arrested. An ex-FLDS woman decided to bare her breast. The festival still has a great deal of improvements to make. The community is evolving, and we are an agent in that change. We offer a world-class music experience that adults can enjoy on a budget. We only charge $10 to get in if you're over 18. If you're under 18, it's free. People can bring their children. We worked with Zion Brewery to bring the first ever beer garden to the community. After 3 years of holding this festival, we experienced no crime at the event, which is greatly pleasing to the local police, and it well represents the integrity of the Short Creek community. There are many areas in which we plan to grow next year. We would like to save those secrets for another time. We hope that you will join us in 2020 for the 4th annual Colorado City Music Festival. It will again be held at Maxwell Park on May 9th, 2020. We're expecting 2 stages and a lot of other big details that I can tell later. We have a Facebook page and an Instagram page and a website, thecoloradocitymusicfestival.com. This is the part I hope you'll really listen. It takes a lot of money to put this on. We're still accepting and will always be accepting sponsors, beneficiaries, and volunteers of any kind in our great effort to bring music back to Short Creek. If I can answer any questions for you, I would love to take some time right now. And I thank you for joining thank you for joining me for this talk on the Colorado City Music Festival. Thank you. They got a microphone.
All right. We'd like to open the time up for comments and questions. Feel free to go up to the microphone there in the middle.
Hello, thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
In your bio, you mentioned you're also an occultist, and I want to know how that all fits into the story.
Well, it's been the pursuit of knowledge that led me to Short Creek. So I kind of touched on, I was raised with no religion. I became Baptist, became Mormon fundamentalist. And then I studied Tibetan Buddhism at Ergen Sampton Ling in Salt Lake for a couple of years until I found out they had even more gods than the Mormons do. And we don't even know about all the Mormon gods, right? And then I went on to just search out like ancient symbolisms, which, you know, Mormonism is full of symbolism. And of course, that led to a study of the occult, which I wouldn't say that I'm extremely knowledgeable in, but I think anyone who does claim to be extremely knowledgeable in the occult probably doesn't know anything about the occult. So I studied from there, and then I eventually founded an organization called Howl, the Holy Order of Wildlife. I spoke on that yesterday. There's a Facebook page for that, too. Yes, sir?
Please come up to the microphone to ask your question. Thanks.
I was just curious what year you first went to Colorado City.
Had to be 2013. Okay. Yeah, because I had done my first couple of tours. I went from Utah all the way up the California coast, and then I did a tour from Utah to Georgia and back, and it was on that return trip that I went through there.
I work with a lot of people down there.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard really good things about the music festival.
Good, I'm glad.
By people who have been involved in it, but I haven't gone yet. I'll have to make a point.
Yeah, May 9th, 2020. Have you been to Maxwell Park before?
Oh, yeah, I've been working with that community for 15 years.
Cool. What do you do?
I'm an attorney.
Oh, yeah, they need you. Yeah, it's beautiful out there. Yeah. Any other questions or comments or anything like that?
I was just curious, in your journey from fundamentalism, did you ever become affiliated with any particular groups or just knew some and personally, mm-hmm. independently believed, and then how did that change to Buddhism, that transition I was curious about?
Yeah. So I did not formally become a member of any of the different fundamentalist groups, but I met with people from a variety of them. The first people that I talked with just a little bit were those two gentlemen from the Kingston group, and they were very informative and gave me access to old literature that I didn't already have, specifically Truth Magazine that was published, I believe, by the Mussers out of Short Creek. I visited the AUB two times. I went to church at Centennial Park one time, and then I have hundreds of friends that grew up in the FLDS. So, yeah, I learned from them. Oh, and also I've become very close friends with some of the more fascinating fundamentalist people I've met, who they've evolved rapidly over the last number of years, but the Confederate Nations of Israel, I believe they were called, they don't exist anymore as an organization, but a lot of people have heard of Alex Joseph, Bigwater, Utah. He was the first libertarian mayor in the United States. And a very fascinating story. But I've become friends of some of his followers' children, who really have a unique, like, actually one of them writes for the Holy Order of Wildlife, and she believes in fundamentalist Mormonism, but also believes in, like, energy work and, you know, Native American stuff, just very diverse. They're a very fascinating evolution of Mormon fundamentalism. Yeah. But as far as how it transitioned into Buddhism, I had studied Buddhism before, and I've thought about this because it's a very unlikely transition, but I think what it came from is I came to a point with Mormonism where I was extremely interested in the mysteries. And Mormonism is a beautiful religion because the philosophy can go deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, and there are great many things that have been spoken of by different prophets and apostles, but then there's always room for further inquiry in Mormonism. And I really liked the feeling that comes from trying to comprehend a great mystery, and that sense of awe and that magnanimous greatness, you know. And I always thought, like, if I could hide a kolob, was the best Mormon hymn, because it just had that, you know, that aspect to it. And Buddhism, the state of enlightenment that people are seeking to achieve, to me, has some of the same qualities. And where now I would say I don't really know anything, and I like to study religions and see if I can make sense of their philosophies, I sum up my personal beliefs now with what I call the Howl Mantra. I am constantly in awe of the great mystery which surrounds us. And my daily religious practice is to repeat that through my head as much as I can. Anybody else?
I'm just curious if you had any reaction to music in the FLDS community and among people in that background, what they know, like the person you said listened to the radio, and so is there any more, like, what they're used to? Some may have never had any exposure to Gentile music and just hymns, I guess, but, or maybe there's more to it than that?
The feedback has been awesome. So, to be honest, I expected, so to summarize this, everything I thought I was going to experience with Short Creek and the community has been just wrong. It's been totally just exaggerated, and I've found the people to be very nice and just warm and inviting, and ever since I've been going out there. And most people I know have enjoyed the same experience. So I expected that we would receive backlash, you know, from the community, you know, little acts of vandalism or whatever. And just as a precaution, like, our festival's small, we don't have a huge security force. I usually camp out behind the stage after the festival to make sure nothing gets sabotaged. And the worst thing that happened was last year at like 12:30 in the morning, a couple of drunk concert goers got on stage and danced. You know what I mean? Like, we haven't had any problems. We haven't had any backlash. this past year, we actually even had a couple of FLDS vendors come to the festival, which is really cool because amongst the FLDS, they practice this teaching from Brigham Young, where Brigham Young said concerning apostates, you should leave them severely alone. So personal, excommunicated from the church, but excommunicated from you as individuals as well. So it's not uncommon for if an FLDS person were here in the room now, and let's say their sister, who is no longer in the religion, was sitting on where you're sitting, you know, that the FLDS person wouldn't even look at the other person. Just, you know, not going to be mean to them, just going to just not acknowledge you at all. So I figured we would experience some of that, but we've had so many people come to the festival and be like, oh my God, that's my cousin, you know, and run up and they're hugging each other and they're like, I thought you were still in. No, I've been out for a year. Well, get on Facebook, you know, and it's been really cool to see those reunions. And almost all of our support is from people who might have been FLDS anywhere from a year to 10 years ago. It's a lot of support. One ex-FLDS man this last year gave $15,000 to the festival, which it would have not really happened if it wasn't for that. So a lot of support. Yeah.
Can you say your comment at the mic, please? Thanks.
And then the music that they're familiar with and what they experience there.
that's a funny point. So the first year we did the festival, I booked almost exclusively acoustic artist that played very light music. And the first act was straight up like, you know, like Christian music. And I thought that's what, you know, would go over best. And I wanted to gradually increase the intensity of the music. And after it was over, Terrell Musser, who's out here, who grew up in the FLDS, was like, you should get something like Five Finger Death Punch or something like really, you know what I mean? Like rocking. I'm like, would it go over well? He's like, oh, yeah, man, yeah, it'd be really cool. So the second year, our headliner was a blues band, like a full-on, you know, rock and blues band. They loved it. Last year was Royal Bliss, which is a Utah-based hard rock band. And now we're just like, we can book anything, and they're going to love it. And there are bands now in Colorado City made up entirely of members who were FLDS. I can think of three bands in Colorado City where everyone in the band was FLDS, and they're way talented. Yeah, it's cool.
Since we've just got a few minutes, maybe I can tell you a little story that's musically related.
Sure.
When Warren Jeffs came into power, any kind of music was outlawed, and you'd be kicked out. You'd lose your family. You'd have to be sent away if you were to listen to any kind of music other than their music. But a few years ago, probably before you were involved, people who had left wanted to do a 30-year class reunion because they'd gone to school and wanted to get together. And so they got a venue, which happened to be one of the compounds that was built for Warren Jeffs that he was going to occupy.
Oh, the bed and breakfast. Yeah.
He was going to occupy that when the children prayed hard enough to get him out of prison.
Yeah.
Okay, so that never happened. It went to a creditor, and now it's a bed and breakfast. But that was the venue for this school reunion, and they had karaoke that night.
Yeah.
And Harvey Dockstetter, I don't know if you know Harvey.
Yep.
He got arrested for disorderly conduct and resisting arrest because he was doing karaoke, singing a Neil Diamond song, Hello, My Friends, or whatever it is.
Wow.
And people blocks and blocks away that were FLDS complained because it was the prophet's place and they could hear the music. And so he was arrested for disorderly conduct. And then he tried to get away from the police because the police were arguing with Willie Jessup.
Yeah.
You know, Willie.
Who owns the place now, right?
And so he got arrested for disobeying an order because he tried to step away and he was told not to do that.
Yeah.
In any event, that case went to trial, and the judge couldn't dismiss the failure to obey an order because a police officer, even though he's an FLDS cop with a pure religious bias, had given an order, and he was wearing a uniform, and that's pretty strict, strictly enforced. But the judge sentenced him to community service and gave him credit for putting on the high school reunion.
That's so good. I love that. Yeah, I know those people. It was his Chamber of Commerce meeting that I spoke at when I first gathered support for the festival. Yeah. Another thing that people should know, Colorado City puts on one of the biggest 4th of July celebrations. It's very worth going to. I've been in the parade 2 times. I didn't get to go this year, but I think they get around 8,000 people out for that. People related to them come all the way down from Canada and up from Mexico, and it's really cool. Any other questions, comments? All right. Thank you for being here.